It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Well, this week we've had a couple of interesting meetings, and a citizen lobbyist will be calling in. Here she is, and we'll go and talk about them. Good morning, citizen lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I just finished a wonderful interview with Sean Lyons, who is the hiking guru of South Central Alaska. He's written a number of good books. And, of course, is revising them. He's going to be at Fireside Books on Sunday, signing off. But he's just a wealth of experience over the years, talking about and describing and doing the hikes that we all enjoy all over this place. But let's turn from that. Go ahead.
It's not the same Sean Lyons, who's an accomplished guitarist, too.
You've got that. I have heard term in Arctic Organics. And, of course, he's also the Sean Lyons, who happens to own one of the better Italian restaurants, in my opinion, in Alaska, in Anchorage. But a multi-talented guy, and that's why I say I'm coming off of a very enjoyable time. I look forward to what we're going to be talking about. Because we've had meetings this week, both the Palmer City Council and a joint meeting of the Borough Assembly and Planning Commission, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Lots to do this week.
Yeah, let's start with the Borough first, and then we'll finish up with the shorter meeting of the Palmer City Council. So you were over there for that meeting, which kind of one of the unusual quarterly meetings, I think they have. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they do try to have these quarterly. Really hefty agenda, Mike. I kind of expected I would be there a long time, but really, even though there were, eight things on the agenda, six or eight things on the agenda, it was kind of a 300-foot flyover, I would think, just to kind of bring both bodies up to speed on what mostly the planning department is working on and compliance, and they're working away on a lot of different things. So it's kind of an update, not too much in the weeds. Made me sort of walk away and say, yeah, there's some things there that really could take a half day work session on them with both bodies. But the results of a lot of what they're working on, just everything pretty much, will be in front of these two bodies anyway at some point. So they started out with a, first of all, I should say, just about everybody was there. I think everybody but one person, Mary Anderson, was there from the Planning Commission. They do have one open seat. District 2 is still open. There is all of the members of the Assembly were there. Oh, Ted Leonard was not there, nor was Mr. McKee, who they expected to come in later, but he didn't. So a pretty full table up there. They started off with Eileen Pabasco, who's been a longtime planning chief at the borough, giving a little update on where the subdivision and construction manual that they've been working on, where that is in the mix. They brought together a group of builders, surveyors, contractors, about a year and a half ago, I think, to start updating a manual that hadn't been updated in, I want to say, at least 20 years. So they've been working away on it. They're just about ready to present it in a draft form to the Planning Commission and plotting, I guess, that we'll go to first, and then planning, and then eventually make its way to be part of code with the Assembly. But there were some, and they've got a tall order. Some of the outlines that they came up with, of course, is trying to keep housing affordable in the valley, but, also make sure there's some guidelines on there for construction as we start to fill in here and not make some mistakes that they had. They even said that there is some talk of that the Assembly should consider some type of impact fees down the line. So, and sharing the burden, more distributing the burden of infrastructure across the borough a little better. So interesting points, nothing really came of that. Mr. Sumner had a couple of questions, as you might expect, because he is a contractor. But the big thing was that the mayor really wants them to give him a timeline. He thinks that this has been pushed around for a while. He appreciates that, lots and lots of hours that volunteers have given and staff to doing this, but he's ready to see a product. So it sounds like maybe by the end of the year, first of the beginning, I'd say the beginning of the quarter of next year before budget time, that they may see something in draft form. And that's really when the work will be finalized. There was a good presentation from Code Compliance, Alex Strong, about a new mobile platform that they're using for permitting and code compliance, and gave out a nice handout showing how a little technology will go a long ways. They've really been able to streamline driveway permits and issuing warnings for people being out of compliance with their projects and stuff. So it's kind of a win-win. And we'll hear more about this again, I think, as we get into budget time, because it involves the amount that people have to pay for driveway permits and that sort of thing. There is some talk of bringing back building permits again. And so that will, again, be kicked down the road a little bit. But a little bit good overview where they're at. Very high-level overview of the Metropolitan Planning Organization, the MPO that we've talked about a lot, Mike, made me think that it would be good to maybe have someone from the borough come in and start talking about that, maybe do a show about that. It's when federal dollars, when you get to a certain size around the country, 150,000 people or more, in order to get federal funds directed to you and not have to go through DOT or the Department of Transportation in the state, which is a big advantage, you have to form what they call a Metropolitan Planning Organization. So the borough is at that. They start the endeavor soon to, and it's kind of complicated but very interesting on how the flexibility they have to actually form that Metropolitan Planning Organization. But it could mean a lot of increased dollars to the borough directly for projects as opposed to going through the state. So I'll just put that in the parking lot, Mike, and we can talk about maybe doing a whole show on that, because I think it is really important. And it also goes to how important it is that the census, another thing I want to put in our parking lot to talk about, is to the borough, because the size of the Metropolitan Planning Organization and what it covers is going to be determined on the upcoming census. And we all should know by now, if we don't, that Alaska is the first state to be counted in the census.
Right.
So they had a little bit of discussion about how that will affect road service areas and that sort of thing. But just, again, very high-level flyover to make those bodies aware of how important it is. And it's not one of those planning things that's optional. You must do it by federal standards when you get to a certain size, so we're there, or we will be after this next census. Talked a little bit about the capital improvement program and the process that they now go to form that program every year. That is kind of an arduous thing. They have produced in the past, I don't think they have the last couple of years, a big shiny glossy book to take down to Juneau to fight for capital projects. We haven't had any capital projects, so to speak, in a couple of years and aren't really expected to get much. And so the planning department is wanting to streamline that process and how they put that together and not have to spend so much time on that if it's not really going to be necessary. So a little bit of chatter back and forth about that, and making sure Mr. Mayfield wanted to make sure that we still get community input from our road service areas and other areas, but it sounds like they're trying to come up with a more thoughtful process to put that together, which I think, in my own opinion, is really well needed to be done. So a little bit of start to talk about that. Last two things, Mike, were kind of big things, really, talking about residential zoning options. This comes up, we have a lot of misinformation in the borough whether or not we have zoning at all. We do actually have a little zoning. We have a single-family lot residential use districts. We have large lot single-family use districts, residential land use districts. We have some use districts, not really what you would call and what most people think about as zoning. But there was a good explanation from, again, Eileen Tabasco of the Planning Department on how neighborhoods, subdivisions can use that to protect themselves from things they may not want in their neighborhood. We've talked about a little bit, and I think you were at the last meeting, Mike,
when Right. People
from Finger Lake came out because they are unhappy that a big commercial development is being built in what they considered their residential area was on their plat. But really good point that people should know is the borough does not enforce what's on your plat. They can enforce their own code, that's all. And so the way that to work around that is to actually go in, petition like you would for an LID, and a subdivision become an actual residential subdivision, and that go on your plat. And they can enforce code on that. So a new new subdivider can do that to protect the houses that he's building in his neighborhood, or even one that's already established can do that through a petition method. So that was kind of interesting to know. But they are redoing Title 17 and trying to make it streamline. They've been working on this for a while, but maybe as they move some of these other projects around, they'll have a little more time to talk to work on that, and a lot of work needs to be done, in my opinion, on that. Last thing, Mike, was talk about the lake management plan. That's another one. There's spotty lake management plans across the borough. Of course, we know we've got lots of water bodies. Lake management plans can be contentious. They can take a long time to form. They're very different depending upon the nature of the lake, whether, you know, it's a big lake or it's a very small, more residential lake. And we a little different. There are some people now, because we're getting a rising amount of land use conflicts, that want to revise ones that do have lake plans, want to revise those lake plans, and the planning department is looking at what their capacity is and wondering if that's the best thing to do. So they're talking about revising sort of their guidelines for lake management that were put together in 1999, sort of updating those. So that they have a general good lake guideline plan or management plan, and that if people want to have a more restrictive thing on document on their own plan, can go through the petition process and bring that without redoing an entire plan. So just another thing that they're putting out there, haven't completely put it together. There is an old document that they are talking about updating. That, again, go to plotting, go to planning, and go to the assembly. But it sounds like a good way to streamline things. All these will take and should get a lot of public scrutiny and input, and we'll try to stay on top and make sure that people are aware when these things come in front of the public, the opportunity to do that.
Well, it sounds like it was
excited,
a very
Mike. We're
yeah.
Over there by 7:30.
Yeah, that was a very productive sounding meeting, and I know that we were not there to stream it, but Stefan Hinman was, and I'm going to put that audio of that recording up on Radio Free Palmer, so you'll be able to easily access that as well.
Great.
People have.
Yeah, it was over at 7:30, so not a long listen. Shorter than the Palmer meeting, I heard.
Well, the Palmer meeting was interesting. This is the first meeting of the Palmer City Council after the election. And it's the second, actually. The first was on Monday, where there was a certification and a swearing in and a reorganization of the council. Edna DeVries, of course, has remained as mayor. But the deputy mayor is Linda Combs, and deputy mayor is Steve Carrington. And the focus on this first...
Did that change?
Let's see. I think
I want to say that's the way it was.
That's the way it was? Right. There was no change. There were two new faces on the council, of course. Richard Best, who had been there before, has returned, and Joe Valerius is the new person there. So they seem to get along reasonably well. focus, I can tell you, and there were really three things they were talking about in some detail. Get out of the way, is that the attorney came out of his seat and came up front and did a little piece around the Open Meetings Act and made sure that the new people, the old people, all those people were aware of what this was about. And he did it in an interesting way. He asked questions, and he asked if there were people who were on the council there would respond with answers to questions about the Open Meetings Act. And people generally had a pretty good idea, but there was an extending of knowledge of what it's all about and why it came about to be an Open Meetings Act and how it applies to the council, but it does not apply to the Alaska State Legislature. So kind of an interesting time, and that recording, we streamed it, we recorded it, and that's already up on the website, so people can, if they have questions or thoughts about Open Meetings Act, I think that's a nice dialogue piece and part of that meeting that you could listen to.
I appreciate that. I started listening to it last night, so yeah, it was a good piece.
Yep. Second piece involved the city manager's report. He pretty much talks about the things that are happening and about to happen. He did make a comment about the reality of the darkness descending upon the city because they're still struggling. I use the term struggling. They're still in process of fixing the lines connecting all of our streetlights. And as people know, if you've lived here and you're downtown, every so often a section of the street lights will go out. And these days, when it's dark early in the morning, it's very noticeable. And so they've been working on it, and it's a part of dealing with the need to upgrade the system that's been in place for a long, long time, and which just is, in his terms, I think, described as brittle. The lights are in many cases new. They're LED lights. Poles stand up nicely, but if you don't have power to the pole, nothing much happens. So I think that's going to be worked on. There was a fairly lengthy period of time devoted to a very important point, and I thought it was handled well. Coming up next July, a delegation will go from Palmer, will go to Saroma in Japan. Every 5 years, either a delegation comes here or a delegation goes there to further this connection that we have with that city. So this process had begun some time ago, and there'll be roughly 20, 21 people that will be going from here. These will be people that are some official representation from the city, but they will also include people from the community who have been involved in one way or another with the sister city arrangement. Full disclosure, both Lee and I are planning to go. We went 10 years ago when I was sitting on the city council, and the discussion at this meeting was around payment, and they handled it pretty well. The question was how many people would be, if any, paid for by the city to go. The end result was that the mayor said that she was not going to go, but because of the nature of the relationship, official representation would be maintained by Linda Combs, who's deputy mayor, who plans to go. She will be going without her husband, and it seemed clear that there was a willingness on the council to pay for her travel to other council members. Both Sabrina Combs and Julie Berberick also are planning to go, but they will pay their own way. And then, of course, anyone else who's going will also pay their own way. And the question that was dealt with, I thought, nicely was, okay, this is something that has to be paid for up front now to make the arrangement to go next July. But we're in this year's budget, and then we still have not authorized the budget and money to spend for next year. So it was determined that people would pay, and in the case of Linda Combs, she would be reimbursed probably reimbursed. The intention was to the sense of the council was to pay her way, but that the reimbursement would happen once they've done the budget process and allocated the funds. So
So why not pay all the council people's way?
Well, that discussion happened, and partly it's precedent, partly it's the dollar amount. What we're talking about when you say pay their way, it's about $1,600. So it's a substantial sum. And the reference was made when I was on the council back 10 years ago. The mayor, and in that case, the mayor and his wife went and were paid for as official representatives of the city. But as a council member, I paid my way. There wasn't really support for paying for other members other than an official representative to go. So I think, one, we have that precedent, and two, looking at the dollar amount, and three, looking at the willingness of the council members who were interested in going, but were willing to pay rather than to spend the extra $3,200 from the city's coffers. So that's my observation and about it. And of course, this discussion is still ongoing, in the sense that the tickets have been paid for, but reimbursement will be as a result of the budget discussion that goes on. What I wanted to stress, kind of underline, is that the discussion and the way it was handled was good. I mean, they walked through it, and everybody had a chance to look at it and talk about it, et cetera, and they made that happen. There's one other piece that was also significant that came up that was discussed, and that has to do with what to do with the advisory vote on term limits. And perhaps as something of an oversight, upon further review, the attorney pointed out, and the clerk agreed and had from, I think, the beginning, felt that if this term limits were to be accomplished as a change, it would be a change in the charter and require a vote of the people. So the advisory vote really was left as saying, okay, this is an advisory vote that tells the council to put it on the next ballot in order to have it voted on. Because they could not go forward with the idea of just voting now to have a term limit. The rules of charter change require that it be voted on specifically by the people to change in a certain way. So they walked through that and agreed that once the budget work was done this year in January, it would be brought up and but handled so that it'd be ready to go at the next election.
Was there any discussion about going to a mail-in ballot or?
Nope. The only discussion around the election was a very thorough review by the clerk of a number of suggestions that had been made by a variety of people about how to improve the process, which would not cost a lot of money because there were still people who had complained that there was no handbook, et cetera. Another issue that came up, I spoke to actually, had to do with the website, the city's website, which arguably does not go out of its way to help people understand what's happening with the election. And I suspect that the general agreement is it's important to review that website to see how it, along with all of the other suggestions that were made, could be making an improvement on what was an 11% turnout on this election.
Yeah, I share your concerns with that, Mike. I heard that little bit of the recording, and I'm glad you brought that up. The new website is a bit of a struggle for me, and a part of it is you're just used to the old website, but I find it not as intuitive maybe as it could be. So maybe that is part of the next budget cycle or the next upgrade. But yeah, I think, you know, I share their concerns. It is expensive to go old school and send out the ballot, paper ballot. The borough themselves have struggled with that too, because the publishing of and the mailing is really expensive. But electronically, I think they could do a lot more to provide information, because that's where a lot of people get their information now.
Sure.
And they could, that barrier could come down for the next election. So, I hope they have a really good talk about that after the budget's over.
I think they will. Well, Citizen Lobbyist, I want to thank you for calling in today. We covered a lot of ground, and I look forward to next week and see what happens after the next set of meetings go and happen.
There's one on Tuesday, Mike.
Got it. All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.